Good afternoon. You are listening to Shoes on a Wire on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. My name is Madeline Taylor. Today on the show, I have for you part two of Coming Out of the Alphabet Soup, a compilation of stories and interviews done with folks who are pansexual, bisexual, trans, or queer identifying. These stories were originally aired for August 3rd, which was CITR's special programming for Pride Month. And we didn't actually get the chance to air all of them on that day. So there are a couple extras that I wanted to share. Last week, I aired part one. Those were interviews done by Elizabeth Holliday. And this week for part two are interviews done by myself. So I've got stories from Josie Boyce, who is a trans activist and artist in Vancouver, Chris Northup, who is a father and proud husband living in New York, and also Ben Curry, who is an artist living in Ontario. But before we get to that, I wanted to play a song that I've had stuck in my head. And I do this thing when I have a song stuck in my head where I listen to it on repeat for days until it gets to the point where I never want to hear it again, or I think I never want to hear it again, or at least have all of the lyrics memorized. And I'm still on that kick. And it's with a song by a band called Chastity Belt. The song is Different Now, and it's off of their new-ish record, I Used to Spend So Much Time Alone. And as a coworker of mine so adeptly put it, Different Now is probably the best song they've ever written, and I couldn't agree more. So this is Different Now by Chastity Belt.
Thank you.
was different now by Chastity Belt. I really just wonder what it was like when they came up with that guitar lick. It must have just been stuck in everyone's heads. It's always stuck in mine, and hopefully now it will be stuck in yours too. So a little gift from me to you on this afternoon. All right, so now I'm going to play for you part two of Coming Out of the Alphabet Soup. As I said before, this is a series of stories by people who are pansexual, bisexual, trans, or queer-identifying folks. This is three interviews with Chris, Josie, and Ben. Next week, I have two more, the final installation, so stay tuned for those, but enjoy their stories.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Holliday.
And I'm Madeline Taylor.
You're listening to Coming Out of the Alphabet Soup on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
This piece is part of Rainbow Waves special programming for Pride 2017.
Normally, when you think about coming out, you think of gays and lesbians.
We wanted to hear stories about what coming out looks like for people who identify as bisexual, pansexual, queer, and trans.
We wanted to share stories that don't get as much airtime, from people whose identities are misunderstood or even thought not to exist.
These stories show how individual coming out is and the importance of finding one's identity, no matter how that process looks. Before we get to the interviews, Elizabeth and I wanted to share with listeners why we decided to do this project.
All right. I was interested in doing this project because the path for identifying as queer for myself has been fraught with trying to navigate the lines of bisexuality versus queerness and what that can mean and what that looks like. And I found it was very difficult for me coming out and wanting to explore bisexuality but not really having a lot of precedent for that and not a lot of conversation around it, and sort of in this environment of biphobia that exists, especially around the idea of bisexuality not really being real, or, you know, not really being an option or meaning a very specific thing, and there not really being a lot of recourse for seeing how people have navigated that for themselves and what that means for them and how that influences their life. So Yeah.
Why did we decide to do this project? There's been a lot of talk, especially on the internet, about visibility. And for me, I feel like I've been in the process of coming out for at least 4 years. And I recently came into a committed relationship with a girlfriend. And this is the first time in my life that the people who are closest to me have taken my queerness and bisexuality seriously and believed that it was something that actually existed. And so it's the first time I've felt seen in that way. And for me, I wanted to think about and ask other people about what visibility has looked like for them, if they've found it, why it's meaningful, and how coming out played into it. So that was my main purpose. Also, I get a little bit sick of people talking about the alphabet soup of LGBTQIA2S+ as though it's a burden, and I just think that it's really important to recognize that visibility and activism in those communities didn't stop with the legalization of gay marriage, especially in Canada. So visibility is important, and listening to the stories of folks with really diverse experiences is something that I think is important, especially around Pride, and that's why we went and recorded so many interviews. In early June, I did a call out on Facebook asking if anyone in my network wanted to share their story of coming out. Josie was the first person to get back to me. She's an artist and activist who lives off of Commercial Drive. When I arrived at her character home for the interview, her cat made sure she was the center of attention. We settled into her living room to chat.
My name's Josie Boyce. I live in East Vancouver. I've lived here for a long time. And I'm one of the organizers for the Trans March happening August 4th. I kind of do, what do you call, I guess, you know, Jane or Jack of all trades. I do a lot of poetry. I have 3 poetry books and that I've published, and I have a memoir. And I also do painting and graphic design. So I do a lot of different artistic endeavors, I guess. Started writing poems in college. I took a creative writing course. I always went to open mics. You know, the first time I did it, which is in Winnipeg, I was just a big ball of sweat. And I was also in the 90s very much in the closet trans-wise. And a lot of it, especially if you look back at some poems I thought that were not about that, actually are about being trans. So I had a lot to say about that and a lot to work out. And then I found as I've aged, I kind of sort of just want to have prose about that. Very early on in my probably late teens, early 20s, I started identifying as bi or queer. That was the time, I'm old, that was the time that, you know, queer started becoming a word that was more acceptable usage. People self-identified as opposed to having it be a slur. And I'd always sort of, my whole life, you know, known I was trans, but, you know, as a kid, I didn't have the language for it because it wasn't there. Right. You know, there were just like sensationalistic stories of transvestites in the National Enquirer and stuff. Right. That was the only thing I knew. Stories of forced feminization and stuff or horrible, you know, serial killers in movies. Right. So, you know, you kind of don't want to be that. Right. You know, and but as I got a little older and I did more reading, you know, I definitely read up on stuff and I started as soon as I saw the word transgender, I was like, OK, that's me. And, you know, I started coming out to friends and family in my early 20s and nobody really understood it. Like I talked to my mom a few years after I first came out to her and she was like, oh, I thought you were telling me you were gay, you know, because she just didn't have any understanding of it either, even though I explained it. I grew up actually in New Brunswick. Okay. In the 70s and the 80s. And then I moved to Winnipeg for university in the 80s. And for me, it was, I really came out here because I wanted to escape the sort of persona that I developed to pretend I wasn't trans, which I had in Winnipeg, and I didn't feel like I could do it there. I wanted to go somewhere new and start over. Right. But it still took me a long time. You know, I've only been transitioning really since 2012. So I sort of was in and out of the closet over the decades since. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, always almost transitioning, but not quite where I wasn't ready. When I first got to Vancouver, there was an elder trans woman who started a transgender support group. And because she was using that terminology, I went. And that really helped me sort of at that time be able to come out to my mom and some of my friends because I had sort of a little bit of a support, you know, in the community. And that led me to, you know, like going to the old gender clinic on Heather Street and where there was so much gatekeeping, I wasn't able, like I couldn't, I started to transition in 95 and I had to stop because there was too much gatekeeping, too much psychiatry. And now there's not. To physically transition, you know, as they would have put it, you needed to talk to a lot of psychiatrists, not just one, not just once. And there was the whole thing then of the, you know, you had to live as the other gender because they only considered there to be two. You couldn't, like, I would tell them that I would mention being bi, and the psychiatrist literally were telling me like, oh, you shouldn't say that. Right. Because, you know, they wanted you to be this version of a woman that was, you know, maybe 20 or 30 years out of date. You know, I was only 29 years old and I was wearing kind of sexy clothes, and they're like, you should be maybe a little more conservative. And I'm like, I'm not even 30, you know, like. Yeah, for me, it was just, there was too much psychiatry and too much, like, just, you know, having to justify yourself, right? You had to prove it. Mm-hmm. When I came back from Japan in 2005, I came back specifically because I wanted to start transitioning. But when I got back here, you know, it was my old friends and my, you know, old lifestyle. So I sort of fell back into that and didn't. And I got really heavy, very unhealthy. I was drinking a lot of drugs. And I ended up in the hospital with a ridiculous high blood pressure. I had a bit of a cardiac infarction or however they say. And that kind of, you know, really threw me for a loop. And, you know, I could have died. And so then I said, okay, I'm going to at least start the process, right? So I want to talk to a doctor about it. And my doctor at my clinic didn't know much about it, but, you know, referred me to the current gender clinic was at the time. And this is late 2000s, like 2008 or something. It took me 4 years to get an appointment with a gender specialist. And literally the day that I got the phone call, I'd been waiting for 4 years, and I'd called many times and left messages myself. I got my doctor to write about like 5 or 6 letters, right? And just could not get a response, right? And I was feeling kind of cursed, like, am I just falling through the bureaucracy, or is there that big a wait list? And so they called me, but literally that day I was going to go home and kill myself. I was that depressed. I was starting to really be a jerk at work. And, you know, my coworkers were calling me out on it and stuff. And I just was like, I had enough. And I got some beer and some pizza, and I was going to go home, have a nice dinner, and then get in the bathtub and slip my wrists. And when I came home, before I even had the beer and pizza, I saw there was a blinking light on my answering machine, which I still had one of those old answering machines. It was blinking light. And I picked it up, and it was the gender clinic calling and saying, hey, you can get an appointment in January. Call us tomorrow. And if you get this after 6, which it was, and we will set you up an appointment so you can talk to a specialist. And I was like, oh, okay. So I didn't kill myself, but I still ate the beer and pizza. And the next day, I was much brighter and happier at work, and I kind of talked to some of my coworkers about it. I explained this without talking about suicide, I don't think. But I talked to my coworkers about what my stress was, right? And they were very understanding. And then and I called right away in the morning when I got up. I don't know that I slept. I called and, you know, set up an appointment for early January, right? And I just did it. I had nothing really but positive experiences with that, you know, like maybe a few weird things, but like, and I transitioned really in public working at Black Dog Video on Commercial Drive as a manager. Probably the best feedback I ever got was from, there were 2 or 3 older than me ladies who came in and were kind of like, oh, well, you're wearing dresses now, you know? And I explained to them whatever, and they'd be like, wow. Well, you know, I want to tell you that, and I had this happen 3 times. Somebody said almost the exact same language. I want to tell you that you're a much nicer woman than you ever were a man. I was like, oh, thank you. It was really difficult because I think most of the time I was sort of, whether I was dating a man or a woman or somebody identified as one of those things, you kind of went with the assumption that they had that you were just attracted to people like them, right? Because just to bring it up, when you first start dating, a lot of people scare you away. And literally anybody I dated long enough and I sort of came out as trans to them, ghosted before it was a term, you know, just no more contact. People just left. One woman left the city. She went back to Calgary.
Oh my god, that's drastic.
Yeah, I used to go to gay clubs, but I went there just to see the drag queens and stuff, or trans people who were around, and talk to them. Mm-hmm. You know, it was easier to pretend to be straight, actually, as much as maybe the sex was fun. Mm-hmm. The culture of it for me was just like, okay, I don't fit in the cultures I've tried at home of being straight. I didn't fit in being gay. I didn't fit in because all that stuff was conflated in, even in my own mind, with gender, right? And I had to get that sorted out first before I think I could really understand my own sexuality. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I had been in and out of the closet and out, and so I'm out, and then, you know, people are getting used to it, and then I'm back in. And you could always tell, because back then, you know, I was really presenting male 90% of the time. And, you know, if I was really presenting male, I would grow facial hair, right? And always really interesting facial hair. It wasn't just, you know, a goatee of the, like everybody in the 90s had a goatee, right? I had a big biker, big mustache with a little beard like going down like this, and big sideburns. You know, bikers used to buy me drinks because I had cool facial hair and would, you know, ask me about my motorcycle and stuff, and I would say, you know, I don't have one. I'm just cool. But I thought, well, if I'm trapped this way, having to present as a guy, then, you know, I'm going to try. And I tried and I tried. It just, you know, it just never take for very long. It would be a few months later, and then I'd be shaving everything off and secretly dressing at home. And then eventually I would start going out to parties or clubs and stuff. And then, I don't know, something would happen. I'd be into a girl or something, and she really wasn't into somebody who was cross-dressing. And, you know, so it'd go back in the closet for a bit, right? But then it'll always come back. I think the terms are for other people. I'm Josie, I'm transgender, and I'm sexual. That's it. There's no prefix for me. It's just, I don't need it.
I had never spoken with Chris before we got on the phone last week. Chris lives in upstate New York with his wife and daughter. We had to reschedule our interview to coincide with his daughter being away at camp to make sure that his house was quiet enough to talk in. Here's Chris.
When I was, I said I'm 28. When I was a young teenager, I learned that I had an attraction for women and I liked women. But because of where I grew up, in a very rural area, we didn't have education on the T in the LGBT. I didn't know that the trans identity existed. And so I went to a high school with K through 12 was about 300 kids in the entire school. All upstate, rural New York, middle of nowhere. It's beautiful, but then it's small town, so most everyone knows most everyone's business. And even being viewed as a lesbian, I was like the token lesbian of my class, if you will, or it was still fairly taboo if to be out as gay or lesbian. But then later on, when I was 18 in college, a freshman in college, I started to learn a little bit more. The internet was accessible, and I started to question whether I might be trans. But even then, in what would be like 2007, 2008, the information, supplemental information that there was on trans healthcare or transitioning was still very minimal. And unfortunately, the things that I found when I turned to the wonderful world of web for support or answers, I didn't find anything comforting. It actually took me about 9 years after I thought to myself that I might be trans when I was 18. I didn't really come out to anyone. There weren't any resources available to me. I just tucked that away and repressed it and ignored it and didn't really acknowledge it. And I presented outwardly as a female, still knowing how I felt internally. And I referred to myself with friends often as a genderqueer. One of my favorite phrases was, a little boy inside of me feels or thinks a certain way, and that would be the expression I would use. That makes me really excited. I would say that my transition started before I started hormones, in that I started asking my friends and family to use male pronouns. I chopped off all my hair. I had very long hair prior, which I didn't like, but I was afraid of how it would look if I cut it all off. So because it took me so long to come to terms with my own identity internally as male, I think that trans folks probably ask themselves a lot, what does it mean to be a man, or what does it mean to be a woman? Because those words can be defined in many different ways. And so it took until I was with my wife. We've been friends for more than 10 years now. married for two and dating for at least 6 years. But it wasn't until she and I had a deep, important conversation that this light bulb clicked. And at some point in time, I just kind of threw my hands up in the air and I looked at her and I said, Grace, I love you. I don't know what to do. I guess I'm trans and I don't think there's anything that I can do about it. I don't know what to do. But I'm grateful to say that she's been with me throughout this journey. November 18th of 2015, I took my first testosterone shot. June, our daughter's name is June. She is the sweetest thing. Kids don't know biases. Kids don't know prejudices. They don't care. Kids just love. And they can be so accepting and open-hearted without even really knowing it or trying. She is probably my sweetest advocate and greatest blessing. Before I started hormones, I had cut my hair, and she was very young when I did that. And so I was presenting as male without having hormones, but she was using male pronouns just on her own. It wasn't something we asked her to do. And it was before I was even out to, like, at work or in even my closest networks. It was just something that Grace and I had talked about. And so June, our daughter, started using male pronouns just on her own because that seemed to be the energy, I guess, that I was putting out. And we didn't correct her, obviously. Eventually, you know, she was using male pronouns here and there. Eventually, we had an age-appropriate conversation just about how sometimes people can be born and their outsides don't always match their insides. And I used just general terminology stating something to the effect that I was born with the body of a girl, but I have the heart and the mind of a boy. And that's just how it's always been. And we asked her if she wanted to continue to use male pronouns because we had noticed it was something that she was doing. And she was like, yeah, of course. It's just the intuitive little kid, you know. It's amazing. She grew up with it, I guess. So it's just something that she accepts as normal. And she's a sweet little girl. Our daughter is biologically mine. I carried her before I transitioned and before Grace and I started our relationship. It was from a not very healthy relationship, and so not everyone knows. Some folks kind of assume that June is biologically my wife and that she carried her, but I carried her, and she calls me Dad. Primarily, I would say that I have a connection with my daughter, a parental bond with my daughter, biological parent bond, if you will. But I can remember speaking at a trans group. The conversation was on the subject of certain things that are biologically innate to either men or women. And more or less, I argued that, yes, I was born, I was identified female at birth, and because of life circumstances, I ended up getting pregnant. For personal reasons, I didn't feel that an abortion was something that I could carry on with. And so I chose to have my baby. I wasn't on hormones, and I wasn't even out to most of my family. While I was pregnant, I felt very uncomfortable in my body. Pregnancy itself can have its own aches and pains and discomforts. Some women, they say that there's supposed to be this, you know, there's supposed to be this kind of a glow to it. They put a spin on it. It's supposed to be more warm and fuzzy, I guess, than it was. For me, though, just with the changes that were going on in my body, it was essentially the polar opposite of how my brain is wired. So I did feel this kind of a disconnect with my body while my body was carrying my child. But I don't think that has affected the connection that I have with my child. I just didn't feel a connection with my body when I went through pregnancy. It was very difficult. I had very strange dreams about living as male, and I'd wake up and I was very pregnant. See, I think I said something earlier about trans folks often try to define the term of either man or woman. What type of man do I want to be? What type of woman do I want to be? I would say that I am comfortable in my masculinity, much more so probably now than I was in the past. I've always been a social person and tried to be a helpful person. I try to define myself as a person, I guess, rather than as a man, or necessarily a woman. I think that the type of person I am, I'm an honest person, and I try to leave the world, or even my small little world, just a little bit better, you know, every day than it was before. As far as my masculinity, I think I just feel much more comfortable within myself, and I don't feel the need to pose as a masculine macho man, if you will, I guess. I don't need to act or behave extra masculine to make up for the fact that I was born identified as female. I'm much more comfortable in my own skin and able to focus on the things that really do matter, which is not my gender. I'm already creating other ones in my mind here. my daughter and my wife, my family. I'm able to focus on the things that really do matter rather than being a man versus being a woman. I think that's a blessing that transitioning has given me.
Ben was someone I met through radio almost 2 years ago. He was interested in telling stories about relationships and intimacy at the time. He now lives in Ontario, and we hadn't really spoken at all since he left Vancouver. But he got in touch and was really eager to talk about his experience of coming out as bisexual.
My name is Ben Curry. I'm 27. I identify mainly as bisexual, and I am an engineer and a writer. Right now I am in Ottawa, Ontario. The first person I ever came out to, it was actually kind of flippant, and it was just in conversation. It was a coworker of mine. We were on a work trip, and he was fairly new at the company, and I was asking him about if he enjoyed it and what he thought, and he said everybody was great, but he was a little bit nervous because he's gay, and he didn't know how it would be accepted, and it's always kind of this it causes a bit of anxiety for him when he comes out to a group of people, especially in a work environment. And I don't know what compelled me to say it, but I was like, oh, it's no problem. Everybody here is really open. I'm bi. And I hadn't thought about it. It wasn't premeditated. And it just kind of slipped out. To be honest, it had been like a fear of mine growing up that I would be outed. I didn't know. I didn't think I was gay, but I had these strange thoughts that were clearly different from my peers. And I was very open and curious and interested. But until that moment, until I said it and the word just kind of hung out there and it felt okay, I hadn't really thought to identify as bisexual until it was out there already. So I was 24, 25. It felt very normal. And it felt truer than anything else I'd ever really said. I mean, not that anybody goes around saying they're straight, but I said it and it just like resonated and with every bone in my body. It was a great feeling. It was really cool. And I kind of took that home from the trip and I sat with it for a bit and it very quickly became the new normal and it gave me permission all of a sudden to start exploring. And so I would go online into chat rooms and start to meet guys from all over the world and it was a quick little switch of my dating app to go to men and women and then started chatting with local people. There was a big stigma around being homosexual when I was growing up in elementary school. I had a really good friend who came out as gay when he was grade 6 or 7. And I immediately distanced myself from him because I saw the harassment that was brought upon him. And he's a wonderful person. He's very strong. We're still friends today, but I definitely went through a period where I distanced myself from him out of fear. And then ever since then, it just, I wasn't around it. I didn't have gay friends. I didn't have any role models in my life who were queer or identified as anything other than straight. It was all very run-of-the-mill, conservative, suburban Ottawa-type folk. It was much easier once I moved to Vancouver, once I started meeting people and just being around different types of cultures, different types of different music scenes and different art shows and things like that. I started to pay attention a lot more to people who were being themselves and being authentic and realizing that authentic people come in all different colors. I'd never actually been with a person and been attracted to them or had even sought out like the attention of a man or a differently identifying person. And in fact, it was the opposite. I steered away from people who were very overtly gay, let's say. It made me very uncomfortable to be around them. I think because I saw a part of myself in them, and I was afraid of that being outed. I was afraid that if people saw me standing beside a very flamboyant man, then they would start to associate some of my characteristics with that. There was a lot of shame. There was a lot of fear there, absolutely. The fear was of myself. I had no negative thoughts towards these people. I had no animosity or any negative thoughts at all. When I was in group interactions, let's say, and always filtering stuff to make sure that I'm not coming across as too feminine. That consumed a lot of my mental energy, was not wanting to seem gay. And so when that kind of went away, when I kind of surrendered to the fact that, you know, some people might see me as being feminine and that's not only okay, but it's very much who I am and something that I need to really embrace. It allowed me to be a lot more comfortable. It allowed my mind to settle a lot more and be a lot more present. And then the biggest change by far is just being able to really appreciate the different qualities and characteristics of other people, to stop categorizing them, people as too feminine or too this or too that. They just are the way they are, and they're either authentic or they're not. And whatever their authentic selves is always the most beautiful. And to be able to see that in them is... definitely changed my life. It's felt like the longest 3 years of my life. It was various stages. First, it was my friends in Vancouver. It was my roommates, which was like talking about the weather. You know, it wasn't a shock and it wasn't difficult at all. And then there were my friends who maybe didn't live in Vancouver, but I was still very close with, who I felt a need to reach out to. And the last big step was my family, who were all back home. They were here in Ottawa when I was in Vancouver, and to reach out across the country, it was over the phone. But, and that's all of these continue, all of these conversations and all of these discoveries, let's say. But I feel very fortunate to have had the community I've had, the resources. I mean, the things on the internet, people on the internet, strangers on the internet are wonderful. And then my closest friends have always been there, and my family has been very tolerant to something that that is very foreign to them. Like I said, growing up, I had no gay role models. My parents didn't have any queer friends. It was unexpected. I had to describe what being bisexual was. I mean, like, I was convinced there was a point there a couple of years ago where I was convinced that I needed to come out to my parents for, like, to save our relationship. I saw that I was distancing myself more and more from my family, and it wasn't what I wanted. Like, my parents and my sister are such wonderful people. I didn't want to have to live, you know, across the country for me to be able to feel like I could be myself. And I expected it to be awkward, and I expected it to be confrontational even. They're quite conservative, and I knew they had differing views, but it was important enough to me to have the conversation, and that's all that mattered. I knew I would fumble over my words and I would be choked up, but the overriding emotion I wanted to fixate on was just the love I have for them and how grateful I was to have them in my life, and I wanted us to become closer as I got older, not become more estranged. A lot of people wondered why, like, what's the point? And even like, after coming out to my parents, they said, well, like, what's the point of telling anybody until, like, until you want to get married to a man, pretty much. Like, why come out? Like, why are you doing this? Like, I was just stirring the pot, and I get it. And I also get that they don't get it, because they haven't been through something like this. They haven't like felt different to their core, so much so that they can't even walk down the street without being disgusted with themselves for hiding something like this. Maybe they'll see it one day and maybe they won't, but and that's okay. But it was important for me. I mean, to look back and see how consuming it was to hide this was just ridiculous. I should have described my coming out process as confusing and long and extended. I think I did say long. But even before I ever mentioned the word bi to anybody in person, it was such a long, like, struggle of what is going on. Why am I thinking differently? Why am I feeling... It was very confusing because half of me was quote unquote normal. I was attracted. How many times I told myself, well, Ben, you are attracted to women. Like, when you have sex with that woman, it's genuine. Like, you're not kidding yourself. So what's up? Just focus on that. A lot of ways I think it would have been easier if it was very black and white. I'm gay or I'm straight. Trying to figure, that's what I tried to do. I just need to figure out if I'm gay, and then I'll be more than happy to come out. That's how I kept phrasing it to myself. I was like, if I just had the evidence, if I had proof, if there was some online test I could take that was like, you're gay, get it over with, like, go be free and be gay. That would have been so much easier. Instead, I just lived in this, what is it, purgatory? Where's like the limbo place? But I just kind of sat on the fence for a long time and realized I never really had to get off the fence. I could just sit there. Dating's been wonderful. My relationships, that was immediate. As soon as I started identifying as bisexual, I was much more easily able to connect with people in just a much more authentic way. My relationships were all of a sudden real. Like, I was showing up finally to the table. And even going back and having conversations with ex-girlfriends of mine and explaining kind of what I'd been going through. And I mean, it's oversimplified, but it all kind of made sense, you know? It's funny how liberating using the word bisexual was and how quickly I saw how limiting it was. It's funny because our culture now is, there's kind of this whiplash of going counter that black and white binary of straight or gay. And then now we're getting into, you know, how many different terms can we invent to describe all the different types of people there are and all the different types of orientations and identities, which is great because, well, for me, you know, finding the word bi was big and this monumental thing, but what if we just didn't have to describe it, right? What if we didn't have to wait to find the word before we just let ourselves act the way we wanted to act and be attracted to the people that we're attracted to? I mean, even when people are like, well, it's just a phase, or like, that's not a real thing. Like, you're just figuring out. I was like, maybe, like, who knows? But right now it fits so damn perfectly. People actually, that very person I came out to didn't really believe in that people were bisexual, oddly enough.
That was a story from Ben Curry, and you just heard part two of Coming Out of the Alphabet Soup. Once again, the show is Shoes on a Wire. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and those were three stories from folks who identify as trans, pansexual, and bisexual. Thanks again for listening. I'm going to leave you all today with a song from the new Feist record. The song is Century and the record is Pleasure. I'd highly recommend checking it out. I thought I was over Feist. I had my Feist moment in like 2008 with everyone else, but it's really good. It's really, really good. She like samples some metal in there and things get weird, but in a really pleasant way. So this is Century with Feist. Up next on CITR, we've got Double Space with a Pride episode, actually. So stay tuned for that. And thanks again for listening. Take care, everyone.